Test, 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 test. One, two.
Yeah, so welcome to this NIST lecture. I'm not Niels, Christoph. Just replacing Niels, but not entirely, just for this three-quarter of an hour. We have another edition of the NIST lecture. It's my great pleasure to introduce to you Sylvia Young. She's from the Danish DBI, Brandt Institute. And she has, actually, her roots are in Norway, so she's stemming from Trondheim originally. She went to Copenhagen to pursue a PhD, and that was in an area that is related to forensics and biometrics, so in between. working on gait recognition. And then she stayed in Copenhagen and is continuing to work in that area now with a new institution. And I'm very pleased about her activities in biometrics and establishing a Danish biometric forum, re-establishing that. And I'm very pleased that she accepted the invitation to talk to us today in this lecture. The floor is yours.
Thank you. The microphone works, right? Yeah. Looks pretty. How's my hair? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for inviting me as a speaker. And as Christoph said, I have a background in forensic science, a PhD from the University of Copenhagen, where I investigated gait in the use of criminal cases. And you might wonder why I'm standing here at a Danish Institute for Fire and a rooster, and what does all this have to do anything about biometrics? But DBI has been and is still leading within fire, but we've also expanded into the security area for the past decade, which of course biometrics is a very important sector within. Yeah. The agenda for today looks something like this, starting from the left bottom. I'll try to explain something about what biometrics is, why we are using it and how, and then I'll go briefly into some of the modalities. Of course, in 45 minutes you can't cover too much, but I'll try to cover the most important ones. And then I'll talk a little bit about standardization, which is a very important aspect within biometrics. And then I'll talk a bit about the market demands and give you some examples of how the biometrics is used in the market. And lastly, something about in the future, what can we expect, and yeah, sci-fi sort of things. Before I begin, I'd like to just to see how the audience is. How many of you are students? Okay, so quite a lot. And how many of you are researchers? Okay, so that's, yeah. So they're not any other than students, researchers? Okay, yeah. Good. One more thing before I start. I'd like you to take out your smartphones. Probably the only lecture where you're encouraged to take your smartphones out. And look at it very closely. Try to examine the screen, for instance. And this exercise works better if you don't light the screen and check your messages. So try to look at the screen. Can you see anything particular? Fingerprints, yeah? Yeah? Anything else? Sorry? Yeah. Dirt, yeah. Can you see beyond the dirt? Yeah, you can see your face. Yeah. And what are all these things? They are biometrics. And the point is that biometrics is everywhere. Even on your smartphone, where it's maybe not supposed to be, but it's there. I'd like to spend some minutes on explaining what DBI is and how we work for you to better understand why I'm standing here today. DBI is an independent, privately owned, non-profit enterprise. We are approved by the Danish Ministry of Science, Higher Education and Innovation as a service institute, a technological service institute, and we're part of a GTS network in Denmark, which are translated to the English, it's an advanced technology group, and we are 9 GTSs all in all, and should cover all technological aspects to some degree. And you see DBI in the bottom there. We have a strong R&D department, which submitted 10 EU project proposals last year, 2014, whereas two of them were directly related to information security. We are an active member of the European Association of Biometrics, and we are active members of two working groups within the ERNCIP, which is short for the European Reference Network for Critical Infrastructure Protection. These two groups are the video surveillance groups and the applied biometrics. And lastly, we're about to establish DBI as the national contact point for biometrics. And in relation to this, we have taken over the daily duties and the property rights of the Danish Biometrics Forum. It's equivalent to Dansk Biometri Forum. So hopefully by April this will be up and running with a new and fancy website. So if anyone is interested in hearing more about the forum, you can also find my contact details on the last slide. And I usually like to start with the definition of biometrics, just to be sure that everyone is on the same page and you all know what I'm talking about. And in this case, I've taken the definition from the ISO standard SC37, which says that biometrics is automated recognition of individuals based on the behavioral and biological characteristics. And these characteristics can be either the structure of the body, which is more or less static, such as a fingerprint, and it can be behavioral or physiological, which is more dynamic, for instance, gait analysis or keystrokes. The most common application of biometrics you all probably know is the passport, electronical passports. And the first biometric wave can be roughly traced back to the events of 9/11. Well, biometrics was actually researched and developed in a minor scale prior, but the attacks made the activities escalate. And the reason for that is that biometrics can enables us to link personal information with the individuals, such as names with the personal IDs, ID numbers, and it can minimize false IDs, identity thefts, and it can also minimize the number of passwords we have to remember, and it can increase the security. Biometrics can be used in verifications where we verify whether you are the person you say you are. And it can be used in recognition to recognize one person from a crowd. And it can also be used in identification in police cases to identify a perpetrator. And it can be used in authentications to authenticate whether you are allowed to make this transaction. And biometrics takes us from this two-factor authentication, where you have a knowledge factor and a possession factor, such as passwords for the knowledge factor and passports for the possession factor, and brings us to the multi-factor authentication, where we also have the inheritance factor, such as a fingerprint. The inheritance factor is the extra factor biometrics brings because it's something you are. And the inheritance factors can be measured with different modalities. And I've collected the most common modalities in this list here. I won't go through them all, but I'd like to highlight these four, namely face, fingerprint, voice print, and iris, because they are considered the most traditional and the modalities that are most applied in the industry in the different scanners today. I've also put DNA on the list because it's today it's the most accurate modality, but it's not commonly used because it's time consuming and it's more used in forensic cases than in the industry and in security. I personally find the keystroke modality very relevant. Keystroke is the way you behave on electronic devices, and it can only be more and more relevant as we move into our digital world. The face is recognized by comparing proportions in anatomical landmarks in the face. And I won't go into the details here. You have excellent professors knowing all about things like this. But computers usually perform excellent when they see front-faced pictures, whereas humans are not as good as computers. But in the case where the face is occluded, the computers have very big difficulties matching the correct persons, whereas humans are a bit better because we can take into account things like the hair and clothing and different things that computers don't use to compare. We can actually draw many parallels between comparing face and fingerprints, because in the case of fingerprints, you also compare different anatomical parts. In this case, you compared the locations of the minutiae, which are the ridges in the fingerprint. You compare places where the ridges end, they separate, but also create the characteristic formations. And I put a timeline of the traditional fingerprint here from the traditional ink pad fingerprint, and you can see that it moves over to the most current one, which is the finger on the fly, touchless fingerprint sensors. And these sensors have actually solved the touchless sensor has actually solved many of the problems we had before with the ink pad, but also the touching fingerprint sensor, because with the touchless sensor you can actually get you don't have the problem with deformations of the fingerprint, and you can get a faster accusation, and the users, they don't have to know how to roll the finger or know how to put the finger down on the sensor, but they can just hold it over the scanner. As opposed to the face, the fingerprint doesn't change as much with age, and the same yields for iris. It doesn't change that much over age. And the iris is the colored area in your eye. And when we compare the iris, we usually unfold it to a linear data strand, and it then can represent the face information of the iris. The last modality I would like to present is the voice print. Last of the traditional is the voice print modality, also called the speaker recognition. And the voice comes from the anatomical build of your vocal cord and the air you breathe out when you speak. And it is represented by harmonic frequencies. And I took the liberty of sneaking in the gate because it's been my baby for 3 years. But also because DBI is actually working on some research on gates. And the last project we have is trying to create a recognition of people in 3D. And in this case, the 3D model is... you can calibrate the place so that the 3D model comes out automatically. And in a 3D model, you are better able to measure joint angles because you can, instead of measuring it in a 2D, you can turn the model around and see the location in 3D. But there are many challenges in gait as well, because of course when people wear baggy clothes, we are unable to see the joint joints precisely, and when they carry bags, they cover parts of themselves. As with the other modalities, there are also challenges here. For instance, the face, when it's captured with different lighting conditions and from different angles, some computer algorithms have difficulties. And as I said, the face, it changes with age, and you can also have lookalikes. Sometimes the modalities are dependent on time, the time of the day, for instance, your height, but also your signature, whether you've taken a glass or two. And also, in the case of the fingers, this person tried to transplant the fingerprints of the feet to the fingers. And lastly, your biometric may be taken from you if it's valuable enough. As you can see, there are many different aspects in biometrics. So having standardization and a common set of words we all can work out from is very important, so that the challenges or the different aspects can be exploited and used for a strength instead of a complexity. And there is much standardization work going on at the moment across organizations, and they are divided into these six working groups. And standardization not only helps with the complexity, but it also helps different organizations and different methods to be able to compare the different methods between different producers. For instance, if a scanner, if one scanner is as accurate as the other. And another important aspect of the standardization is that you have a common test database with data you can use. And in this case, NIST is the front figure from the United States. And they provide several databases where you can use their data to validate your methods. And then in the case where you have the same data for different methods, you'll be able to compare the results. Yeah, the biometrics is such a wonderful industry because it's not only limited to the different modalities, but also the hardware and the software and the privacy issues, but also the combination of these hardware and software methods and how to integrate this system. So in order to better understand the market of biometrics, you can divide it into the public sector demands and the commercial demands. The public sector demand, the public sector is the sector where the biggest customers are, and you can and it includes the e-borders, the automatic border control, which includes the passports, the visas, but also the physical gates. And I don't know about you guys, but whenever I go out travel, the most exciting thing is going through the border security to see which system they've implemented. Yeah, or maybe it's just my nerdy nature, I don't know. Last September, I went through, I think it was Gatwick, and they've implemented these gates. A very easy to understand. They have red lights for when you have to stop and green lights for when you can go. And it tells you everything that you have to do, like, please approach the gate. Yes, okay, approaching. And then it also gives you a nice animation of how to put the passport down and when to smile to the camera and stuff like that. It's very exciting. But it also, the public sector demands also includes the EIDs, the national IDs, and also the e-government, such as how to get access to your data, the governmental data, such as your name, your national ID number, and such. And the commercial demands includes the enterprise security, which is the physical and logical access controls, the information transactions, such as your travel information, and it also includes the financial transactions, such as the private transactions between people, but also business to business, the ATMs. We've seen a growth in the commercial market over the past couple of years. And we also see more and more of these smart cards where you can bring your own identity. And you can the good thing about these smart cards is that you decide what information can be read at any time, and your biometric is stored in a card and not in a central database. An example of the biometrics out in the public market is the unique identification authority in India, where each Indian will be registered with a national ID number, where their names, parents, gender, date of birth, place of birth, and address will be registered, in addition to 10 fingerprints, 2 irises, and a face image. And this is all stored in the central database. Up till last year, they had collected 700 million people, and by 2015, they expect to have collected all Indians, which constitutes around 1.2 billion people. And can you imagine the size of that database? It's probably the biggest biometric database existing. The Acuity Market Intelligence predict that by 2018, half of the world population will have a national chip-based national ID card, which increases the current number up to 3.5 billion. Europe is currently the leading region right now in the national IDs, because most of the major airports already have these e-border gates adapted. But national programs in countries like India and China are a huge part of this demand, and they will constitute for more than 60% of the issued national IDs between 2014 and 2018. The best thing about coming back to Norway is drinking the water. As I said, the commercial demands have increased the past couple of years, and this actually happened after the exact date of 20th of September 2013. And this date is a historic date because it marks the shift between the shift of biometrics from Washington D.C. to Silicon Valley. And can anyone guess what happened that day? Christopher already knows the answer. The iPhone 5 was announced. And Apple, they actually managed to put a fingerprint sensor, something that's related to security and a very dangerous thing, into such a common application as a smartphone. And we see more and more use of mobile we see more and more use of mobiles in authentications, because the mobile already has so many sensors incorporated, such as the microphone, which can be used for voice biometrics. And actually, the advantage of having voice biometrics as opposed to like iris and face is that you don't actually have to be present, physically present, but you can authenticate yourself through your own cell phone miles away. And it also has sensors such as the camera. You can take a picture of your face or even your fingerprint. And Apple is actually such a great case because they're so aware of the consumer market and they're so close and they know what we need or what we want. So they actually managed to do it again on the 9th of September 2014, 1 year after. This question is easier. What did they do that day? Any suggestions? Do you have the answer, Christoph? Yeah. Yes. Again, the fingerprint enables you to authenticate payments through Apple Pay. Yeah. And another good example of how biometrics is capturing our daily life is through the biggest social platform, Facebook. In this case, they have developed a method called the deepfake, which verifies pictures of a person and matches them with the same person. And this method is based on an artificial intelligence method and has an accuracy of 97.25%, which is quite good because compared to humans, we can do the same matching at an accuracy of 97.53%. So the method is actually pretty close to what a human can do, and that will be more and more relevant in the future because these methods will most likely perform as good as a human or even better than us. And these neural network methods are getting even faster and more intelligent, and it's in fast development. This is another algorithm that can detect faces, even occluded faces and faces from an angle. The previous one was also able to detect faces in different lighting conditions and different angles. Yeah, but even though biometrics is a wonderful thing, it also brings aspects such as privacy and ethics, because biometrics is not something you know or something you have, but it's something you are. It's suddenly you can reveal things about yourself unintentionally, such as health data, which is sensitive data. And these health data could actually be read out from a fingerprint or an iris scan. And as more and more biometrics is incorporated in surveillance systems surveillance systems and access systems, the tracking field becomes even more powerful because at some point you can't be anywhere without someone else knowing that you are there. And the last point on my slide is that if something is for free, you pay with your personal data. The Biometrics Institute makes a survey every year where they ask their members what they've been doing the last year and what they expect for the coming years. And the results of this last year's survey was that the face and the fingerprint will be the two modalities most commonly applied in the future devices. And the iris and the voice print will be present, but not as much as the face and the fingerprint. They also expect more combinations of modalities to increase the security. And as in a multimodal solution. And they expect from the research and development side that they will look more into liveness detection and spoofing to make sure that you won't get away with cutting someone's finger off, because you also need for instance, to look for blood flow in the finger. There will also be research into other modalities, such as, for instance, tattoos, but also challenging modalities in altered or mutilated fingerprints, as you saw previously. The biometrics is gone from the security perspective to a more user convenient and effective process. It's no longer the dangerous security related field, but it's more coming into a more user friendly and making our daily life more effective. You can unlock your phone with your fingerprint instead of having to dial the 6-digit code. And we see a shift where the developing countries are in focus. The big companies are trying to get the banking to the unbanked, and also giving the people without governmental identities a means of identification. And we see an increased market for the mobile devices, such as the front figure Apple is doing. In this case, mobile is also considered mobile, such as in your mobile phone, but also mobile as in mobile kits and mobile scanners, things you can bring along. And there are actually more mobile connections than people in the world, so of course mobility as in all your devices being connected to your personal, for instance, your phone, in line of the concept of Internet of Things. But we will also see more and more biometrics incorporated in wearable devices, such as this smart band. And this smart band authenticates you by measuring your ECG, your echocardiogram. And it's said that ECG is not as accurate as the face recognition, but and less accurate than the fingerprint. And if you remember in the beginning, I said something about the multifactorial authentication, and devices such as these helps us to getting closer to the continuous multifactorial authentication. You should check out the video they have on the homepage. It's really futuristic. And maybe things like this enables us to, in the future, not having to remember any passwords at all. That would be great. Yeah, and there will be more and more focus on the user convenience and efficiency, and biometrics will help us, and we will see more and more the authentication, on-the-fly authentication, and self-service systems, where you can capture biometrics from a distance, that you no longer need to approach a specific kiosk to get authenticated or verified, but you can approach a gate and will automatically open because it's your biometrics been captured 10 meters away from that gate. And we will need more and more advanced infrastructure because biometrics will be more and more incorporated. So the privacy and ethics will have to be incorporated in the advanced infrastructure as well. And but we also see solutions that integrate with the existing systems, such as some of these smart cards made for transactions, for financial transactions. In this case, this smart card, you probably know this is a Norwegian company where you can swipe your fingerprint to authenticate different financial transactions, and these cards work with the current terminals. So people are also looking into the money. How can we incorporate this fast and right now? And the more mobile solutions we have, the more mobile transactions there will also be. So we need to consider all these privacy issues, because in the end, biometrics is already here and biometrics is come to stay. So I hope you guys, the future of biometrics, will help me lift it to the next level. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sylvia, for a very good overview presentation. When you started with your future outlook, you mentioned liveness detection and spoofing and anti-spoofing. Let me take the opportunity before we open questions that this future is an immediate future. Next week, Monday, you can return to this room and we will have a full day discussion with researchers on the topic of liveness detection and spoofing and anti-spoofing. So you're most welcome to return to this room. Yeah, we have time for questions. Patrick.
Well, if you limit it to only the way you type, you could maybe, if there's some defects in one finger, you can probably measure that this finger is not typing as correctly or as fluently as the other ones. But if you expand it to the way you behave on the computer, you could also maybe you can measure if you search on Google for any, you know, like medicine or things like that, because that is also a part of how you behave and could also be individual. So yeah, it's again the privacy and trying to not leave too many traces on the internet. It's also, I consider it also a part of how you behave on a computer. But of course, if you limit it to only the typing part, it's yeah. What was the first? Yeah, okay, yeah. Well, you need to be alive to be able to type all the time. yeah. Yeah. Again, the privacy. I think that people are the most important thing is that people are hesitant to use biometrics because they are afraid of what they reveal with their biometrics. So we would need a better infrastructure of how to protect the data we reveal with the biometrics before we can apply it in an even bigger scale. And that's, I think, maybe the smart cards is a great approach to the privacy, because you have it yourself and you decide when something is read or communicated in or out from the card. No. I was talking about the smart cards. Yeah, but of course, yeah, cars could also implement some of these things. You can open your car by approaching it with your fingerprint, or you could also maybe get your car to adjust the seat after who comes into the car. So the biometrics is the application of biometrics is unlimited, but again, we have to be careful about what we use and when we use it and who can see our biometric data. I would try it because it fascinates me, and to some degree I'm more prone to the effectiveness and the user friendliness and helping me to become more effective in my daily life than the privacy and ethical issues, and that I think many people have it the same way as me. Even though I'm working with it, I like the user friendliness and effectiveness of it. Yeah. But it increases the security to some degree, because maybe someone who got the new iPhone, they didn't have any locks before at all. I like the keystrokes, but because it's much more dynamic and needs a longer time span, I don't think it's as applicable as, for instance, fingerprint or something that's more faster or easier to enroll or inquire. But of course, it will solve many of the problems. For instance, that it authenticates the right person that types on the computer. You don't have to remember 100 passwords. But being able to log into the computer could also be done in different ways than with the keystrokes. Yeah, but then again, you also have the big list of of all the different modalities. Some of the modalities do exclude people because they might have damaged fingerprints or irises. But again, a combination of different modalities would be the best. Maybe the way you type and then looking into the camera at the same time, I don't know, yeah. A combination is definitely the way forward. And not only does it include more people, but it also increases the security, because you have to be yourself at different levels, not only the way you look, but also the way you behave. The short answer is that you can't really you can't really protect yourself, because you, as you said, that the cameras can be everywhere, and in order to protect yourself, you have to know every location of every camera. And I think we're a long way before we can map all the devices that collect information about you. Yes, it would be relevant to have a society where you are not mapped, but I find it, I have difficulties believing in that we will have a complete space where we're not captured in any way. But of course, it's a very relevant question and a very relevant topic, and even companies I've been talking to are interested in finding ways where the biometrics is not exploited by anyone. So it's not only the personal me that's interested in it, but also the producers of these systems.
Mm. 3D capturing of biometric characteristics is a wonderful thing, because you somehow have a countermeasure against spoofing, yeah, because 3D models are rarely and it can be spotted. We worked on 3D face recognition for access control some time ago, and the major challenge in the field work that we conducted was that people were either too close to the camera or to the capture device, and or too far away, because by the nature of the two components, either two cameras or illumination and CCD, you have a limited capture volume. So my question is, now when you apply this to people walking, is this not an intrinsic contradiction between biometric capture on the fly or on the walk and the constraint of a limited capture volume? How do you compensate that? Do you have the batteries of 3D scanners or
The project we are running right now is we try to implement the system out in different supermarkets or banks, and the way we've worked out of this is by putting the cameras in narrow hallways. For instance, when you walk into a bank, you have the narrow hallway.
Forced into that.
Yes. yeah, so we put it in forced spaces. But the technology evolves, so maybe in the future we'll be able to capture bigger spaces with 3D.
Okay, I think the time is over. Thank you very much for the presentation and the discussion.
Thank you.